Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinckney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinckney. Where is my black brother's dignity? That's the title of the show. Where is my black brother's dignity? Without dignity, there is no liberty. Without justice, there is no dignity. And without independence, there is no free black man. So my black brothers, where is my black brother's dignity? We are in a mess here. You know, I'm thinking about Nazi Germany, and they was telling how bad that was. But we had our own Holocaust, and the shame part about that is that, you know, we had over 40 to 50 million people to die in our Holocaust. They were sold into slavery. You know, 35 million was killed by the slave traders, making this the greatest Holocaust the world has ever known. But you can't talk about the black Holocaust because white folks will get mad. White folks don't want you to know that they know how terrible they were. That's why they don't want to talk about critical race theory. You know, I can see where they're at with that, because if I was that horrible, that terrible, do you think I would want my children to know about that? Do you think for one moment I would want my children to know how terrible I am? See, what they do, they try to make the black man hated all around the world. You know, they try to make the black man appears to be the worst people in the world. But it's not so. No matter what they do, they can't do it. You can never justify what these white devils have done. You can't. Over 35 million of our black brothers and sisters was killed coming over here. We don't really know how many was killed by the slave master. And they have the nerve to want to talk about the Holocaust in Germany. They got the nerve to want to talk about that. And all our black brothers and sisters are still being killed. If you go to the store today, it's a strong possibility. You have a 6 in 10 chance of getting killed just going to the store. You got the police. You got them. You got the black brothers and sisters. You got white folks. You got Mexicans. All these different people out to get black people, and nobody really cares. You see, that's important. You see. See, they gave us a national holiday for Juneteenth. They call it Independence Day for us. It's just another attempt to reframe the narrative and furthermore contaminate and weaken the minds of black people. Black people are still not liberated. It's never going to happen in my lifetime. It may not even happen in my children's lifetime. You know, it's never, ever, ever, ever going to happen. Because as long as they're in power, then black folks going to think by them being with them and they like them that they're going to share that power with them. They are not going to share that power with you. They don't even want to share the power with Russia. That's what this war in Ukraine is really all about. You see, this is the United States war, but only the Ukrainians are dying. That's the difference. This is the United States of America war in Ukraine. They started it. Your president started this war. And he's supplying arms to them. Everybody gets something but black people. 800 million at a time. 5 billion at a time. You name it, they've been giving it. And I'm not against immigrants. I'm not. I got to say this. But how about all the homeless people that was living in this country before they came? You didn't set up any shelter for them. Now all of a sudden you're breaking your neck to house these immigrants. Yeah, I got a problem with that. I got a real problem with that. And I don't like it, you see. And then black people, we just don't get it. Let me say this. What if there was no racism here in these United States of America? What would it look like? What if they paid reparations to black folks for all the years of slavery and free labor they got? What if there was no racism here in these United States of America? What would it look like? You know, they would not have the need to go out and find them some Sambos. You see, but the problem is black people are still suffering from the sin of white folks' parents and the white folks today. They're still suffering from that. And it's unfortunate. And here's the thing. Don't you want your children to know the truth? Don't you want your children to know about critical race theory, all our history, not just black people history, but white people history too? That's your history too. Slavery is your history. Slavery is your history, white folks. You can't run from it. Can't run from it. Because when you die, every knee gonna bow. And every tongue gonna confess. That is what's going to happen. And there's no way that you're going to be able to get around that. Critical race theory is what it is. It's history. You know, just tell your children the truth. You guys didn't invent nothing. Y'all took everything from us, the Native Americans and everything. And don't think about how many Native Americans have died. We're talking over 10 million of those you done killed. Good grief. You guys got blood all over your hands. Blood. What if racism didn't exist in America? And I think I said this on yesterday. White folks been coming to me. And they've been saying stuff that they agree with me about all, you know, some of the things that I'm saying and stuff like that. They agree with me. I never thought that day would come when someone from across the bridge would come and want to talk to me. Can we have a conversation? Of course we can, if you're going to be honest. You see, let's talk about black people as a people. We've been traumatized by you devil. Traumatized. We've been abused, mistreated, tortured, whipped. You know, now they talking about you can't whoop your children. But the slave master was whooping the mama and the daddy. And ain't nothing in the world you could say. Nothing. Because you say something, they'll cut your foot off, cut your arm off, cut your leg off. They even try to eat you. But let me say this. We as black people, I can't see a reason in this world why you would want to be like them. I mean, the way they have mistreated our women, just rape them whenever they wanted to. Just rape them, and there's nothing they could do. And you want to be like them? You want to be a sellout? You want to be a Sambo? That doesn't make no sense. They raped the men. That's how buck breaking came into existence. See, buck breaking is used today, but used differently. When them police always go and shoot a black man, that's buck breaking. Because it scares a lot of people. That's why black people kill black people. You'll never hear too much about black people killing white folks. You don't hear that. That's what they do. Buck breaking. Put that in your vocabulary and talk about stuff like that, because that's crucial. Buck breaking. You see, even in the courtroom, they use it. They use that as a tool in their toolbox. And then even during that period of time, they even raped the little bitty children. Wow. Even raped the children. And you got the nerve to want to be like you, white girl. Black people, you Sambo, you guys have been robbed of them, of yourself. But when white folks can't find or can't defeat you, they will always find a black person, some bootlicking, butt-kissing, buck-dancing, bamboozled black person they can trot out in front of you and black folks, and you accept him like he's somebody. And that's why they continue to pay these Sambos to come in and torture our community. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I'm going to hit on this real fast. I don't want this to die up about this guy Trenton Bowen, the vice president of the school board here in the city, here in Benton Harbor, and how he attacked this 80-year-old woman. Not once, but twice. Garden to beat her up. But there was a lady there. There was a lady there. Thank God that lady was there. And she said that he was talking so loud and so abusive that she just had to look at him. But this is what these Sambos do. See, they got the protection of the courthouse. They got the protection of the sheriff's department. They got the protection of elected officials. They got the protection of Benton Harbor Police Department. And they also got the protection of Whirlpool. These Sambos. But you have to take some of the blame yourself, because you keep catering to these guys. So if you go out there and vote for Marcus Muhammad, then you're sick. You go out there and vote for a Ron Singleton, you're sick. If you go out and vote for a Dwayne Seats, you're sick. Even though his mother is not an elected official, but she's just as sick as he is. His mom is a package deal. Then we have Sharon Henderson, who's been a Sambo all her life. Fortunate that we let these people continue to do what they do and accept them like they're somebody. I wouldn't want to be in the same room with these people, you see. And, I mean, how do we keep doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result? It's not going to happen. It is not going to happen. No matter what you say and what you do, it's not going to happen. Then we have Judge Mayfield. We call her the baby snatch. She works in, she's a judge over, she's a real judge. If you didn't know who she was, you would think she was white, because she attacked black folks, black babies. That's her MO, you know. That's what she do, you know. And the fact, you know, black people go tired. They think that, they believe that, that when you have a title like judge or something, that, you know, you're honest, you know, and you might even help black folks. You will never find a black judge helping a black person. That is not going to happen, you know. They're going to do whatever that system tells them to do. This woman has been doing, and this is one of the biggest rackets there were. This is one of the biggest money makers at the courthouse, snatching black babies. That is one of the biggest money makers inside that courthouse, and they depend on that. Just the other day, they fine and cost was up for a vote whether you're going to continue to pay. Why should you have to pay fine and cost when the state has already covered the court costs? That's double dipping. But nobody wants to complain about that. Pinckney always complaining about something. Pinckney always doing this. But you know one thing? If you just sit back and join me, we can get stuff done. I know that sampling isn't going to come out in you. I know it will. And, I mean, how could a human being snatch babies from these mothers? I know the mothers are, some of them are young. But how are you going to snatch that woman baby and not allow her to see her? And you out there selling the baby off. Wow. Then we have this damn against the cheaper police. He's the biggest joke you ever want. Had the nerve that he told me he wanted to talk to the children. Ain't nobody going to listen to you. You're dishonest. Nobody in this world going to listen to you. I know you're dishonest. I saved your job, you see. And if I'd known what I know now, I would have let your butt go down. Yeah, I know my wife. First thing she said, I don't want him in our house. I said, but he need our help. She said, I don't want him in our house. I said, when somebody, I think I have an obligation here, but that's just like Adam and Eve when they was in the garden, you see. The snake that this guy is, this guy's a real snake, and he's the chief of police. He don't do nothing. If you call the police, chances are they're not coming. And the first thing they ask is the person that needs help, black or white. I mean, what kind of mess is that? And not one person in this community said a word about it, and they knew about it. The girl went to City Hall and told them about it, and they did nothing. Not a thing. We're in trouble. We're in trouble until we get better. And the reason why they're attacking the school system, they don't want our children to be a critical thinker. You see, right now our children are not thinkers. You know, they're just out here. They're just out here doing whatever they want to do. Because the parents before that was at the same school. You see, and that's the system that they're using. So the Sambos, next Sunday is the cutoff. If you get it in by 12 midnight, next Sunday, the 15th, that's the 16th, you get it in, your candidate will be put on the ballot as the Sambo of the Year. So far, we have the mayor here, Marcus Muhammad. We have the man who stole the radio station. He ran a good race last time for the Sambo of the Year award. He was neck and neck with Muhammad, but Muhammad pulled it out, you see. You know, he once again, that's 2 years in the world row, he had won the Sambo of the Year award. And then we have the mother and son combination, Dwayne Seeks and Marletta Seeks. They also, both of them, I think, believe got 10,000. I don't know the real total. I think they also got 10,000. They was in that running. Then we have Trinborn. I think he's going to give that Marcus Muhammad a real run for his money, become the Sambo of the Year. I just know it because he's a real life. If you saw him, you'll see what I'm talking about. If you just bumped into him accidentally and look at him, you'll know he's a real life Sambo. Then we have Sharon Henderson. She's going to be running. So that's good. Then we have Judge Mayfield and Dan McGinnis. Whew, man, oh man, these Sambos are real, and Sambos flock together. You see what I'm saying? That's one thing about a Sambo. They will flock, and if they could, they would make it happen together against all the black people in the whole community. That's how they operate. So when we doing things, we need to know. But listen, let me bring in my first guest. I'm going to try my good friend Lee again. I'm going to bring him in, and he's going to tell us about his ordeal. And he's been with me for a long time, but he was sent on vacation. And by him being sent on vacation, he's going to tell us about it. I don't want to be the one who tells his story. I want him to tell his own story. When you're on my show, I want you to be able to tell your very own story. You know, don't let me tell it, you know, because I might miss out on something. But I want you to be able to tell your very own story. Let us know. Let the world know who you are. My good friend, Lee, you are now on the air. Talk to me. Tell me what's going on, Lee.
What's going on with you, Rev?
All I can tell you is going down. And we ain't taking no prisoners, none. You know, we ain't taking, we ain't pulling them up. You know, we're going to be talking about this critical race theory. We're going to do it all, stuff that they don't want to hear. We're going to make them hear. And that's how you deal with people like this. But listen, your story is better than my story, so talk to me.
Okay. So, of course, they falsified some charges on me and decided to take them to the federal court. Now, even though, and it's a U.S. Supreme Court law, is what I found out as well.
You're breaking up a little bit.
Obtained... Okay.
Talk a little louder.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Can you hear me now?
Okay. Yes.
Okay, so the U.S. Supreme Court, the way they obtained their warrant, they sent an informant in, and this same informant, and she'd have done this multiple times, have performed sex acts. She'd be in a relationship with a guy. And then we'll sit there when the police decide to say, you know what, we want him. So then she says, okay, well, he sold me some drugs. Do understand. We had actual video of this. It's everything. The government decided, we still going to proceed with this case, even though it does violate a U.S. Supreme Court law. We're going to still proceed with the case against him. Truthfully, anybody that she set up, case is supposed to be brought back to court. But the federal government did not want to do that because as of 2019, she said, 4,963 tips to the feds. They call her the Black Widow. She's been framing guys. She didn't start just here in Michigan. She started, I believe it was in like the southwest United States. She, one federal judge, they changed, I'm going to show you how they did this. It was a federal magistrate out of Flagstaff, Arizona. I got the case. Remember, I sent you the video with the actual paperwork. Yes, I sent you the paperwork and everything with it. And the federal magistrate stated, we cannot guarantee the safety of the community if she's released. They pretty much were saying, we don't even know who she really is. This woman has multiple dates of birth, multiple names. She's going from state to state doing committing crimes. So what they done, they changed her name, brought her to Michigan, and let her continue doing the same thing, framing people. No, that's not the end part. She was working with some other informants, one who was partnered up with Kenyell Brown. Many people can look him up on the internet. He was a federal informant and committed 6 murders in Detroit, Michigan. Me and Reverend Pingy, we've been talking about this since 2018. Fox News decided to bring it out in 2020. We've been talking about what was going on. So because the other informant, which was his partner, he killed himself, at least so they say. We really don't know what happened behind that fence.
Mm-hmm.
So when his partner, who was on the witness list, a part of the witness list against me, they continued to allow him to stay out and continue to murder people.
Mm.
Now, they tried to say, like, oh, there's something wrong with him. We can't believe nothing he says. You know, when I brought it to my attorney, and my attorney, I'm like, listen, this is who's all in my case. They're telling on each other.
Mm-hmm.
This is everybody in the case. So they decided to let him. He murdered one guy, I believe his name was Christian Moore. He murdered him. When they found out that and anybody that knows Southwest Detroit, they know it's a small area. When they realized that we all knew about it, they said, we're going to send Lee to see a psychiatrist.
Mm-hmm.
This is how the government, this is how the government plays. So they sent me to see a psychiatrist who turned around and said, well, I need you to see a neuropsychologist who's more experienced than myself. So when they sent me to him, which was Dr. Rosenbaum he was on Northwestern Highway out in Farmington in Michigan. Me and him had a talk. And when I explained the whole story, now keep in mind, this is a neuropsychologist. He said, I'll tell you what. They said you have an outburst in the courtroom. I said, you know, that's all lies, but I ain't no need to be arguing about it because they're going to say what they're going to say.
That's right.
So he
that's
said,
right.
Well, can you sign this release so I could talk to your attorney? I said, beautiful. I would love to do that. So I signed it. He talked to the attorney. He sent me back to the first psychologist who the federal government appointed, which was a corrupt one because he'll falsify your information in the drop of a dime.
Mm-hmm.
He said, what do you want me to do with this guy? There's nothing wrong with him. Anyone can reach out to Dr. Rosenbaum out there on Northwestern Highway in Farmington. He said, there's nothing wrong with Lee. What do you want me to do with him? So they sent me back to Dr. Nixon. And he said, oh, man, you know, I want to try to help get this thing over with because he's starting to realize now that, okay, I didn't want him to reach out to your attorney.
Mm-hmm.
But he's
mm-hmm.
like, well, if y'all saying this about this guy, I need to really know is this guy telling me a lie or is y'all telling me a lie? And as he found out, I wasn't telling him a lie.
Mm-hmm.
They were.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all due to what I knew what their informants was doing and getting away with. And I explained everything to him. So they took me through that, went through all of that. In the process of that, that same informant, like, keep in mind, he already murdered a guy, Christian Moore. He turned around and murdered another guy. Now he murdered another guy, robbing him during a drug deal.
Great. What murder is he committing?
Yes, but this is the thing with this one. This time he got caught on camera.
Mm.
And
oh, they on camera.
Yes, and this is how they realized it was, not only did they couldn't lie this time and say, okay, well, we don't know if it's him. His partner who set the deal up with him, he also shot him. So his DNA was left at the scene of the crime.
Oh, okay.
So in the process of him killing this guy, he also shot his partner, who happens to be his daughter's baby daddy.
Did he kill him?
Okay.
Did he kill his huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he killed him. Yes, he did. Now,
wow.
Again, the federal prosecutors and all of them, they let this guy stay out here. They let him continue to stay out here. With him, Kingale Brown, and these other informants in Detroit, what you're going to learn, it wasn't the federal government bringing their informants in when they realized they were doing all these murders. It was the Wayne County prosecutor, Kim Worthy. She's the one who filed murder charges against them. On both Kingale Brown, Spencer Weston, and several of these other informants that have been out here killing. But the federal government decided, we're not going to mess with it. We're going to leave it alone. But now they got him. They had him in, let me see, they've been taking him from the Wayne County Jail to, now they transferred him to the Federal Detention Center in Milan, Michigan. And he's still going to court. So they're trying to give him the opportunity.
Is that on murder charges, Lee? Is that on murder charges or what?
That's correct. They're on murder charges. So there, but this is what they're doing right now. They're trying to give him an opportunity to give them some information to lower his sentence so he can get back out. Yeah, so there's a possibility he's not going to do no real time, even though he's been an active informant and he's been killing since who knows how long. I mean, several people, even me coming out, that came to me and was like, hey, you know this happened, you know that happened. I said, you know what's so crazy? Did none of y'all believe me at first? They say, well, no, we know the truth now, man. We apologize. Okay. I already did the time. But when I went and me and my attorney talked, he said, listen, they're trying to block everything. Anything. They're going to try to throw a loop in this case as much as possible. Mm-hmm. He said, I don't know why. He said, but these people, they don't like you because they know you don't like them. I mean, I'm being real with you. He said, they know you don't like them, and they made sure that they, okay, we don't like you either. But
they
can't
hide.
They
trying to get you to prison for the rest of your life. You definitely don't like them. You know they lying.
My point is that because this is one thing that they trying to cover up. They didn't want to try to proceed with the charges. They put a dead man's phone in my house when the raid happened, and it was one of his victims. Just so happened, I found the news article that says when the family was looking for him, the family had dropped him off at that house, which was the informant's house.
Mm.
So this was the last place his family known him to be, and they've been looking for him. Since starting 2-3 in the morning, they've been looking for him. They say, no, this is where he was at. This is who we know did it. So it shocked me then, hold on. When the family, who I happen to know, they went on ahead and was explaining everything to me. They said, you know what? He's missing his iPhone. Anybody that knows me, they say, well, we know you don't use iPhones. You like Samsung.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is one of the things that played in my favor. Even the family noticed, because one of the guys, we work on houses together. So he's telling me everything where he's tracking his phone at. The phone was given to the female informant who placed the phone in my house. And
so,
then it came
so
and
the
did
lady,
the raid.
The lady Were you dating that informant?
Yeah, we was messing around, and at the time I didn't know she was an informant. To be honest, I didn't know that. But you know how you get that something, say, keep an eye on her, watch her.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, boom. I said, you know what, you gotta get away from me. I'm having a bad feeling, and I need to follow that feeling.
Yeah.
So one day I'm getting my vehicle worked on. They decide to come in and say, she said, well, I need to come get my clothes. Okay, well, I'll do that in a minute, you know. Give me a minute, and you can get everything you need to get. But make sure you get everything you need to get. I don't need you to be around me no more.
Yeah.
While this informant turned around, came and get her stuff, everything, called herself trying to wine and dine, all of this, performing, doing what she do, and then turned around and said, he just sold me some drugs.
Yeah.
And it's actual federal case. I'm going to get it. I thought I had it in my paperwork. I was going through it since I came home looking for it, and I couldn't find it. The case states, if you are acting in the capacity of a law enforcement official, that means informant, police, anyone acting in that capacity, you cannot have any type of intimacy or intimate relationship with the person that you're investigating.
Mm-hmm.
This is from the United States Supreme Court. They violated every single right, went to a judge out of Hamtramck, not Detroit, and had her sign the warrant against me. She did. They raided, pushed the case. So they was trying to say, well, you know, the first Sambo lawyer that I had, he started saying, hey, man, just go ahead. They said they'll offer you a deal for, what did he say, 300 or something grams. I say, did you look at the paperwork? He tells me, listen to this. He tells me, and he gave me a copy of all my paperwork. He said, I forgot the word he used, but it was like, pretty much, you're making things up. Why would these people lie to set you up?
That's an understatement. Why would they lie? That's all they do is lie.
Exactly. So when he say that, he say they offer you a deal for these 350-something grams. You need to take that and, you know, just get out of the way and let other cases take place. I say, why would I do that? But I said, do you pay attention to the paperwork that I gave you? I said, you posted me in my attorney. Did you even read anything that you gave me? Because I read my whole discovery. And that's how I was able to put the video together. I say, the 356 grams that you're telling me that I should plead guilty to, I have the copy of the Michigan State Police Forensic Laboratory Report, and it states no controlled substance detected. So why the hell would I plead guilty to that? I say, whose side is you really on? So then I got to just breaking down everything else in the discovery. At the time when they said I was doing this and doing that in their investigations, I have receipts from different places, automotive shops, AutoZone, Big Race, Oil Exchange, which shows me that what they were saying was a lie, because they said, oh, this moment in time, they was investigating me and they spotted me in Southwest Detroit selling drugs. I said, well, how is that possible when I got a receipt that shows me I was in Rufford, Michigan? I said, that's impossible. How can I be in two places at the same time? Then, this is another shocker, and when I filed a motion, just let me add this before I continue, to get my attorney removed from the case, I made sure I put everything in there, like these are the reasons why I want to have this attorney removed from the case. So I made sure, because now the judge reading everything that I've been trying to argue, and my attorney was not letting me argue this because he was cool with the prosecutors, the U.S. attorney.
Yeah.
And I'm explaining to him, like, listen, they're
your
friends.
Was your attorney black or white?
You heard what I said. He was a Sambo. He was black.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Yes, he was. This was a black attorney telling me this information. But he slipped up because he was giving me the information, and he ain't reading it because I'm telling him, like, hey, I got this issue, that issue, that issue. I can refute all of this. But he didn't want to fight them. This is what it was. He didn't want to fight the government.
Mm-hmm.
So what he decided, he tried to get me to plead to a bold-faced lie that even the Michigan State Police, their forensic laboratory said was a bold-faced lie. This is the same drug that the officer, the 356 grams that the officer tested, and he said he used the NARC2 liquid test. He tested it, and he got a positive reaction for cocaine-based HCL. But the Michigan State Police Forensic Laboratory said there's no controlled substance detected in this. This is the forensic laboratory. So I say, so who are you going to believe? You going to believe the officer or are you going to believe the forensic laboratory? I think they more skilled at doing this than
absolutely.
These officers.
Absolutely.
So this is, that was, when he tried to get me to plead to that, I say, oh, no, you got to go. You got to go. Me and you is not on the same page.
Yeah.
So then when all of that came about, I'm fighting them because, again, they know that I know what their informants are doing. They realize that I know who this female informant really is. I also made sure that I placed that in the reasons of removing my attorney. That way the judge himself can read everything that I'm saying. Even sent them a flash drive. But they wouldn't, at this time, the attorney would not let me get a bench trial. So, yeah, so the case going, they,
you want to have a bench, you trust that judge to have a bench trial?
The only reason that I was going for a bench trial is because, this is the thing, you have to go by what the facts of the case. Not all the time they do, but
no.
When I seen that, they don't, because I'm going to tell you, technically when he read everything, this is what he says. Yes, I agree with Mr. Paisley, but I'm denying the motion. And didn't give no reason as to why. So now I'm continuing. I'm trying to fire this attorney like 2 or 3 times. Before they actually say, okay, we're gonna let him just fire this attorney. He don't want this attorney. Got rid of him. So I ended up with another attorney. He was a little bit more talking. Once I broke everything down, so I say, listen, look at his paperwork. I say, even in the paperwork, these officers are boldly lying while boldly covering up murders. And trying to frame other people for these murders. So while they're boldly doing this and not caring who sees it, because two of the officers, two of them say they was on a raid team both in Southwest Detroit and Northwest Detroit at 6 in the morning. On the exact same day. I say, how are you in two different places? I say, nah, this ain't across the street. We talking about a 30-minute drive.
Yeah.
How is y'all at these same two places at the same time? And I'm like, you know, every right of mine being violated here. So he got it all the way down. He said, listen, I'm going to be honest. He said, you want to fight? We can fight. He said, but I'm going to tell you something, but I'm just going to keep it all the way real. I'm like, what's up? He said, they're not going to bring people to this jury from Detroit. They're not going to do that. They're going to go into places like Livonia. He said, this is how the government plays, because they know Livonia is one of the most racist cities in the United States. So they're going to pick, put a jury pool from out of Livonia.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're going to go into places like, you know, all these other counties outside of
the
Wayne
White County. The White County. That's
exactly.
What they actually get. They're going to get all the White County to come in and fight with you and to be on that jury. And look, if a hamburger was burnt and it was on trial,
mm-hmm.
they're sending that hamburger to prison. They're finding mm-hmm. that hamburger to murder. And that's
oh,
how
I heard so many. So he said, we can fight. He said, but I'm going to be honest, man. He said, no. And he said, I have to just be honest and real with you. He said, I did your grid sheet. He said, that 356 grams, they can't charge you with that. That 100 and some type of grams they're trying to come up with in court, they can't even charge you with that. All of that, the forensic laboratory threw it out. He said, even when they did the controlled buy, which they said that they did on you, they can't even use that technically. But the judge is not allowing us to bring these issues into court. I said, come on, how is that possible? He said, man, it's a dirty game. He said, listen, I'm going to be real with you. Look at me and look at you. He said, hell, I'm darker than you. So they ain't going to like me more than they ain't going to like you. He's not going to be real with you.
They're going to be white as snow.
Yeah.
Everybody don't know that.
Exactly. He said, I'm being all the way real. I can't be no more real than being real with you, man. He's like, I'm just telling you flat out right now how this is going to go. He said, now, don't get me wrong. It's a possibility we're going to lose. He said, I'm going to put up the best fight I can. He said, but we lose, they're going to throw everything at you. Now, you got good issues to fight the case on appeal. He said, well, let's be honest, man. Do you want to wait 5, 6, and 7 years and fight an appeal? Your life is destroyed. This is how they play their game. He said, I did your grid sheet. I can push for probation. Everything else, I've seen what they can only technically charge you with. And I can push for probation on it. Because you ain't did nothing wrong. You ain't been in no trouble. You working two jobs, everything. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
I even had the human resource from both jobs sent a letter to the court. So with all of that I had in my favor, he say it's how you want to fight.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I'm going to be honest. He said, take the little bit. They ain't trying to charge. They willing to, even though technically they can't charge you with the guns because your son's mother had a CTL, and she admitted that they are her guns. But these people are so dirty when they come up with these laws.
They don't care nothing about that.
So
no, they don't care nothing about that. That's the last thing on their mind. And then they keep talking about the land of free and home of the brave and all this kind of stuff. No way. It's not going to happen. See, when you get into that courtroom, 99% of all the judges in this country are dishonest. 99%.
That's true.
And they go
to
whatever the system says. They deal with the system. They want you. They're going to get you. You know, that's how
and
they do.
That's one of the things that they were about. So, I even made sure, and I know the judge probably like looked at that and was like, "Woo!" I said, they're allowing people from their witness list who are informers who set this case up against me to continue to commit murders. Now they're held in the county jail, even put the case number and all of that in it. And I said, the U.S. attorneys are acting in the capacity of a co-conspirator right along with these informants.
Absolutely.
I know they didn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to say what I'm going to say. I don't give a damn if it offends you or not. this is what's going on, and I'm going to put it out here. So I said, okay, man, I'm gonna take your advice on this. So once, when we went, we did it, the U.S. attorney was looking like, yeah, I got you, man. That thing. Even the probation department, no matter what, the probation department, people have to understand, they work for the judge. They don't work for in your favor. No matter how much good you have in your side, they work for them.
Right. They're acting as a system. You know, the judges, prosecutors, probation officer, they all work for the system. And when they work for the system, they do what the system tells them to do.
And that's very true. And I'm going to get to that. I'm going to get to that in a minute. So even though they got these informants continue murdering, continue doing what they're doing, continue selling drugs in Detroit and everything, and these guys are selling, they're amazing. They dressed up dummies. Even though and this is another thing, let me not jump off subject, but this is one thing that these guys don't even realize, is the government is going to tell the defendant who's against him.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing all of this for nothing. The government flat out said who was all a part of it. Now, when I do this plea deal with him, the probation department said, well, we want him to do like at least 2 years. That way he'll be older and we ain't got to really worry about him no more. When I heard that, I said, boy, this is some real psychological stuff they're doing here. We want to put you in a way until you're old and you're pretty much useless in society now.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. attorney was like, well, we want him to have more than that. We feel that he should do at least 3 years or four, you know, and this and that and that and this. My attorney, he did get up. It's like, no, that's what they're doing that's not just, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The man should technically only have probation. I mean, you guys had guys come in here with gun charges, and that's a mandatory sentence, but they receive probation. This man ain't having a gun charge technically, according to this plea agreement. So why is it that he should go away? So the judge says, well, you know what? This is what I'm going to do. He says, I'm glad to see you're doing good and everything, but I hate to be the one to mess up a good thing. So I'm going to sentence you to 1 year, one day.
Mm.
I think it's not a bit. So he's like, I'm just going to, yeah, you're doing good, but we need to disrupt that good you're doing right now.
Okay.
I'm
going to
sentence you to 1 year and one day. So when I get in, just so happened in January, I turned myself in November. Come January, the First Step Act kicks in for federal prisoners.
Yeah.
So once that kicked in, now I already get 85% of my time. So that took my date to September.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then with the First Step Act credits, which I don't think that they realized that it was going to kick in. When that kicked in, and I'm working, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do and everything, saying I ain't getting in no trouble or none of that, it pushed my out date to, when I got released into the halfway house, my out date was July. So they done gave me like 70-something days of First Step credits.
Uh-huh.
So that pushed my out date to July 15th. When I was in the halfway house, they ended up giving me, what the odds of this, because they were telling me, I say, well, my family out there, they want to see me on the 4th of July and all this, all that. You know, not that I really give a damn about the 4th of July, but I'm trying to, you know, see if these people will have some type of sympathy, like, okay, let him go see his family. No, they said, technically, you can't do nothing or leave out of this place until 30 days. Now, they send me there in June 13th to the halfway house. Come July 3rd, they kick in the remainder of the First Step Act credits. They gave me 15 more days. Technically, that took my out date to June 30th. So they had to do an emergency release on July 3rd. It was like, hey, we got to let you go. We can't hold you no more. You got to go. So, which worked out pretty good. I only end up doing a total of, I want to say, a little bit over 6 months in total on the census. Because with the First Step Act, you're only doing like, I want to say like 60% of your time.
Yeah.
So you're not
and
doing
that's new. That act is new, right?
Yes. Well, it was actually passed through Trump and the Senate when Trump was in office, but it came into effect of January of this year.
Okay.
And that's the thing what actually pushed me out earlier. Other than that, I'd still be in there right now.
Yeah. I hear. Wow.
Nah. The informant is still, of course, fighting murders in the case. They get, like, again, they got him locked up.
You don't have a whole lot of more time left. You're going to have to come back this Sunday and clean that up. But here's what I want to know about. Talk to me about that guy that got killed after he dropped his daughter off at school. Talk to me about that real fast, because we ain't got but 2 minutes.
Okay, well, that was Kenan Beard, and they orchestrated the murder against him. And the police, of course, Wayne County Sheriff and the Detroit police was in on that. They used another guy to kill him. And then the guy who killed him, they ended up murdering that guy. That was the guy who they tried to put on me and try to say, like, I retaliated against him for what happened to the guy, Kenan Beard.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they murdered him on school grounds. Elementary.
Right.
It actually was his son. It was his five-year-old son. His son was 5 years old at the time. He walked him into school, came out, sat in his car, and they shot him in the back of the head. They got inside of his car and was waiting for him to come back out. And they trying to act like they don't know who did it.
Absolutely. Well, listen, we got to talk. We're talking more. Let's talk a little bit more about this on Sunday. Because your story got to get out there, and we got to tell it just like it is.
No problem.
I love it. You know, but look, I'm so glad you're home. I'm so glad you're back. And we're back at it again. We're going to continue putting the word out there for them and leave you hanging there. I got to close by saying this. We got to stand together. These folks are not honest. Justice, we will never see because we're so busy fighting. Too many Sambos. Sambos are everywhere. And don't forget, July 15th is cut off, but on Sunday, July 16th, you can tell me if you have a Sambo that you want to run, that'd be great. So the Sambo so far is Marcus Muhammad, Ron Singleton, Dwayne Seat, my letter seat, the package deal again, Sharon Zinnerson, Trenton Bowen. I'm pulling for him to win this time. And we have Judge Mayfield and Chief McGinnis. We have all those people that were doing it, and we're doing it big. Last time was such a big hit. You just don't know how big of a hit that was last time. That was Lee. That was the biggest thing going. We had over 10,000 people voting for a person, you know. And we got about, about 60,000 votes. So that's good. But on that note, Lee, I got to say, I'll see you on Sunday. Hey.
Okay.
Sunday. And it's all over. Have a good day. Take care. Call me sometime.